Headed down to the neon lights, it's where I want to be, because I'm just trying to make it.
You're listening to the Diamonds in the Rough podcast.
I'm just trying to make it.
Powered by Prospects Live.
We're all just trying to make it. This is Diamonds in the Rough. I'm Cole Wilcox, your host. Joined by always, co-host Nick Schnell, producer Grayson Shook. Schnelly, live from Charleston. Left this morning, got there, hopped straight on the pod. He's for the people.
Schnelly, I've heard it. It was good. This is currently what I'm using as my chair. If you can see it, it's a bedside table. So I'm just grinding out here. I just threw together a quick studio.
Yeah, looking good. Got some nice decorations on the walls. Yeah. Got anything up there or what?
No, I'll be in here for about a day, I think.
Throw a DNR flag up there.
I know. I'll have Carly bring it.
Nice. So, yeah, before we get started, something sick came in the mail today. Boom. Turtle box came in the mail.
That one's sick.
Yeah, this one is sick. Very sick. White out with the red handle. Perfect addition to the studio. And listen, it's lake season. I wish I was on a lake right now. And if I was, I'd have a turtle box, because the only problem you'd have with a turtle box in the lake is annoying the next door boat, because they're loud, they're waterproof, no issues. And it's the boat for the lake, or it's the speaker for the lake, rather, not the boat for the lake. But yeah, definitely grab you a turtle box. And if you do, use discount code DNR15.
It can be the boat if you need it to be the boat, though.
It could. It's waterproof.
It is.
Just hold on. You think it would hold somebody up if it was floating and you were on the bottom?
Yeah, it's goated. It's the best speaker ever. So, yes, I do.
All right. There you go. Co-signed. We got a special show today, and it was broadcasted in the Prospects Live Patreon. This a little Q&A action today. We're going to try to do this about once a month. Get the people's questions out. Because like we said, we started this for the fans. So we want to get y'all's input. I know y'all probably don't get tired of hearing the interviews a lot, but you probably get tired of hearing us talk all the time. So instead of us talking about random stuff, y'all can actually ask us about things you're interested in. So before we get started there, a few things to hit on, though. Really only have one thing to hit on. Couple of the rookies. There's a lot of talk early in the year about, well, rookies are struggling, it's bad for baseball, this, that, and another. Well, the time has come where the rookies are no longer struggling. Julio Rodriguez is, I think I saw he is top 15 fantasy baseball player. So, as a rookie, Nolan Gorman in his last two games is 7-for-7 with two bombs. And Bobby Witt had a streak of, I think, 7-for-9 with three doubles, a triple, and a bomb. So the rookies are starting to play well. The fact that people freaked out after a month is quite hilarious to me. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. is 21 years old in the big leagues. Julio's like 20. Nolan's 22. They were going to figure it out. Like, it was just a matter of time. So
yeah.
I think everybody can relax. When you're that good at baseball, eventually you figure it out.
Yep.
And they're kind of showing that now. And Gorman's, both of Gorman's were not cheap at all. He did it again today.
Did he hit it today or yesterday?
Same spot.
Oh, my gosh. His first ball was an absolute nuke.
You know that if you have the confidence to kind of admire your first home run you hit in the show, that it was absolutely bombed. Because, you're not taking any chances. I would assume, you're not pimping one if it's a wall scraper.
I mean, if I hit it as far as he hit it, I would admire it too.
Nuked, yeah. So the boys are playing well.
Yeah,
and then they're just gonna keep getting better. It's always exciting to have some young fellas in the show. But like we mentioned before, Schnelly is in Charleston. He finally broke camp. So are you excited to get back to some actual baseball?
I am. I'm ready to freaking – hopefully I can keep the hot streak going from extended and, swing it pretty well here. And hopefully, get some momentum going, have a good year, and see what happens.
Yeah. It's definitely nice to graduate from rehab and get back to an affiliate. But last thing before we get Q&A – regionals came out today. It was sick. Anytime there's a bracket with a selection show, it's gonna catch my interest. Just brackets are sick. But I was looking at my three teams that I picked, and it can't possibly work out. Georgia and Arkansas both can't go. They'll match up in a super if both were to win the regional. So best I can do is 2 for 3. I guess that's all I can go for. But I'll take it. I mean, that's a good batting average.
I don't even know. I forget. I think I picked Arkansas, Louisville, and Texas, if I remember right, but I don't know for sure.
Yep, Dogs headed to the North Carolina regional. Shook. Florida State headed to
Auburn.
There's a two seed in that regional too, right?
What's that?
There's a good two seed in that regional too, right? Who does Florida State play first?
Florida State's a two seed. They play UCLA first.
Yeah, UCLA is the three. Yeah,
They've got some pitching injuries they're dealing with right now. The Max Radchick, I don't know how you say his name, but he didn't pitch in the Pac-12 tournament, so I don't know if he's going to be available this weekend. I hope he is, because you know you want to beat them at their full strength. But
Sure. I mean, they'll pitch Messick first anyway, won't they?
So they pitched Bryce Hubbert first in the ACC tournament. So I'm not sure, but I don't know. They're both pretty good pitchers. So,
gotcha.
Who's the three seed with Louisville? I know it's Oregon's the two seed, and then Southeast Missouri State's the four seed. But I forget who the three seed is.
There was a good one in that one.
It was good.
Was it UC Santa Barbara?
No,
they're with Stanford, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
It's Louisville, Oregon,
Michigan,
and Southeast Missouri State.
Yeah, Michigan is a dark horse.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kicks off on Friday.
A little sticky stuff action in the Michigan.
Yeah, that was nuts. Yeah, dude got tossed in the Big Ten championship for sticky. Hadn't seen that in a while. Hadn't seen anybody brave enough to use it in a while after the crackdown.
Why even try? Like, you know, if you're not going to get away with it.
I would assume if this was the first time he got kicked out, he's been doing it all year.
Yeah, that's true.
So he made it a long way.
Yeah.
Iowa was all over it too. I don't know if they had played in the regular season prior, but
could have got a ball too, like a foul ball dug out. That's how a lot of it's caught.
Yeah.
You get like somebody cues a ball in the dugout and you pick it up and it freaking stick into your hand. So yeah, I saw that was crazy. And I mean, since we've talked about it, it's come up multiple times. There's unwritten rules in baseball. They don't matter. They are not to be respected because UCLA came back from a 9-run deficit in the ninth inning against Oregon State. 9 runs, 21-12, came back, tied it up, won the game 25-21. Nuts.
I can also say that the drop third strike video that you put out is true because – the other day I was DHing in a 10:30 game in the morning on a backfield in Florida. And I'll admit I wasn't locked in for my first at bat and swung at a horrible pitch. And I had to run down the line and there I wanted no business. But I knew I'd be taken out of the game if I didn't run down the line, so I did.
That was big of you.
Yeah.
The trot of shame. Yeah, it's the worst. It's the worst rule ever. If you haven't seen my video, check it out. And please comment if you disagree or agree, because I just like I get the justification that when a catch is like for an out to be had, a catch has to be made. But at the same time, you're not executing it always. Like if you drop a ball at first base, that's not an executed play. On a drop third strike in the dirt and the catcher blocks it up, that's exactly what the pitcher was trying to do. The catcher did his job. It should be out. I mean, listen, maybe if it gets past the catcher, I still don't love it, but I could see it. But if the ball is right, if they block up a ball in the dirt and it was executed, I do not understand the rule. But I've said my piece. Let's get to the mailbag. Got a lot of good questions from the folks in the Patreon. If you want the link to join that Patreon, I think they talk a lot of fantasy baseball in there, a lot of prospect stuff. So if you're a fantasy baseball fan, hop into that Patreon. It's like $5 a month. Just ask us and we'll send you the link to it so you can hop in there. Shook, you want to get started on the first couple questions?
Yeah, for sure. This first question is – how conscious are you of prospect websites and their rankings, feedback, and or critiques?
I mean, I know for me personally, I'm on social media a lot. So, like, I see it. It's I don't – like, I'm pretty confident in what I do, what I do well. So, some of the like, critiques and stuff, I don't really pay attention to. I like seeing the rankings just because I'm a numbers guy and I love sports. So I like seeing the rankings, seeing who's doing well and stuff. So I pay attention to it, but I wouldn't say I like change my game just because somebody says my slider sucks. Like if I think my slider's good, I'm gonna keep throwing it, you know. But I do think it's interesting, and obviously we work for a company that does a good job with it.
Yeah, I mean, I used to value it way more than I do now. I mean, I think that I get caught up in it more like when I first was drafted and stuff like that. And I think the more that you play, the more you realize, like, as long as you skill play well, it doesn't really matter. So, like, and when you start focusing on that, then it's a lot tougher to go out and perform, especially if you're not seeing things that you want to see or stuff like that. So I just try to ignore it, and I just don't even pay attention to it. Just go out and play.
Yeah.
Second question here is, I'd like to hear your thoughts on Xavier Edwards.
Beast.
Yeah, X, he's the man. Went to a Hawks game with us not a while ago. Like, great dude. I mean, great teammate, all that. He, it's crazy because if he was playing in even like 2000, he's probably already like a 2-year big leaguer. Like he's going to hit over 300 every year. Done it his whole life. We talked about averages not mattering, but that's to the masses, like to fans thinking average is everything. Like if you're a type of player like him who has like an 80 grade hit tool, it matters because he's going to get on base. He's going to steal. He's going to wreak havoc on the base path, and he's an unbelievable defender. So he's going to help. He's going to be a big leaguer, and he's going to help whoever's lineup he's in.
We were talking about this in the dugout the other day, and I was like, I was trying to explain to me and one of the coaches were in an argument because I was like, would you rather hit 260 or would 240 with 25 or 275 with like 7? And he was like, I'd rather hit 300. And I was like, that doesn't happen. Like, people don't just go out and hit 300. Like, it's a very rare thing. Like, Wander Franco does it, like, very, like...
DJ LeMahieu.
Yeah, like, guys, it's rare. Like, not very many dudes hit over 300 in the big leagues and or at any level at that. Like, it's just not easy to do. So the fact that, like, it's kind of, like, unheard of. Like, when you think of a good batting average, I think of, like, 275, 280. If I or anybody else I saw had a 280 batting average, I'd be like, he swings it. But I also, if I saw somebody had a 240 batting average with 25 homers, he swings it too. Like, it's all – it just depends. But hitting 300 is, like, unbelievable. And he also, like, brings a lot of versatility defensively. And obviously he runs well and stuff like that. And his – I would say the biggest thing about X is his baseball IQ. Like, he has a very high IQ of the game. Like, he thinks about it like his internal clock's really good, works really well. So it's funny they asked that question because we were literally talking about X in the dugout the other day.
Yeah, I really hadn't seen him play that often. like obviously we graduated together and stuff, but when y'all were both hitting live BPs during rehab and stuff, I mean, he just barreled up everything. Like anytime he swung a bat, it was barreled. Yeah. He just has unbelievable barrel control. Really good hitter. Professional hitter.
Next question is, what is the weirdest or strangest town / city you guys have played in?
Honestly, I haven't played in that many towns in professional baseball. And the league we were in was really nice. I would say, like, the strangest experience was probably Myrtle Beach. Strictly because we stayed on the beach in Myrtle Beach, which is, like, super rare in minor league baseball. We stayed at a Hilton on the beach. It was kind of sick. Okay. So that was probably the most different experience that I've had so far in terms of like in a city I played at.
I would say, like, I don't know if it's strange. Princeton, West Virginia is the strangest. We played literally at a high school baseball field. It's a high school baseball field. I don't know how else to put it. Like,
the entire Ivy League is strange.
Yeah, yeah, it was. But the other field, like, it's weird when you're playing professional baseball and you're showing up to a high school every day to play.
Yeah.
Like,
well, mine is, I guess, yeah, I would go back to the Cape Cod League. All you hear about is how beautiful it is and how great it is. And like, the nostalgia of it is cool. And you're playing against the best players in the country. But we played at a Orleans Middle School field. I was on the Firebirds, and we played at a middle school field. And all the other fields stunk, too. Like, everybody's like, it's like baseball paradise. Listen, it's not. Maybe for a fan experience, but in terms of, like, playing fields and services, like, the actual baseball, yeah, for sure. It's the best of the best. But, yeah, I was shocked that we were at a middle school field, and you had a bunch of college guys who come from Division I schools who don't know how to fix a mound, trying to fix the mound. By third inning, that thing is dog water. It's freaking terrible. So that was a weird experience too.
Looks like this is a hypothetical. It says, you guys have been called up to the big leagues, but MLB tells the organization you can't play at Tropicana. What city or town would you recommend to the brass for the team to play its games and among the organization's many stops? It says, brag a little if you can about your favorites. So I don't know if that means like the minor league affiliates or
I'm gonna take this as the Rays could no longer play in Tampa and we have to move to a different city. That's what I'm gonna take this as.
Yeah, I guess that's what he's asking.
And this is easy to me. Chanel, you go first.
Nashville.
Easy. I would be like, and it's nothing against Tampa. I'm just like, you can probably tell by the way I talk. I would love Nashville, Tennessee. I'm from Chattanooga. It would be awesome. I think Nashville's one of the coolest cities in the United States, especially in terms of what I enjoy, country music and sports. So that would be.
Nashville would be sick, but just thinking of like strictly like destination, not thinking about like fans and like who's going to show up. I think it'd be sick if you put like a stadium like in the mountains in like Wyoming or Montana. It'd be sick with like a mountain.
Yeah, no, that would be cool. That would be cool. It would be freezing cold, but it would be cool.
Yeah, it'd be sick.
This question asks, what was your draft experience like, setting your price, talking with teams, choosing an agent, etc.?
Let's talk about setting the numbers. Now, how did you come to that?
So basically, like my advisor, because when you're going through the draft or whatever, you're in high school or in college, you have an advisor. You're not allowed to be called your agent. So you go, like, the way it happened for me was, like, I kind of had a number in my head. My agent wanted my mom and dad to both have a number in their head. He had a number, and then I had my number. And I remember I played. It was getting towards the end of my senior year. My advisor was like, just go play, whatever. And, like, a lot of rumors were starting going around that there was a chance I was going, like, gonna get drafted at least around where I would be considering signing. And so, like, we sat down at dinner and my parents basically gave their number. I gave mine. Like, my mom's was really high. My dad's was a little bit lower. Mine was the lowest. And then my agent's was like kind of similar to my dad's. And basically it came down to, like, my mom ended up saying, like, whatever Nick wants to do, he can do. Like, that's my number just because I value like an education and I value him. Like, I think he's a really good baseball player and I think he's worth this number. And my dad was just like thinking financially. He was thinking like, okay, if he gets this number, like, he'll be able to be set up for basically his whole life if he isn't an idiot with his money. And then my number was pretty much like, I don't want to ever go to class ever again in my whole life. So I'm going to make this number like realistic so that I don't have to do that. And then my agents was like fairly like just like all of those combined, taking everything into account, like all of us.
Yeah. Mine.
And then it basically came down to like it was. It ended up being my number, and then
yeah,
that was really it.
Yeah, mine. We just kind of crunched some numbers on like percentage of people who get X amount in the first round going to the big leagues out of high school, and it was. It seemed like there was a high percentage of people who got more than like 3 million got to the league, which like obviously that's a very high pick. So it was kind of like, all right, if you get $1 to $2 million, this is your percentage, blah, 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 blah. And obviously like for the most realistic and also the highest percentage was like 3 million. And I really want to go to Georgia. So I don't care to even say what I set my number at this point. It was like $3.5 million coming out of high school. Pretty much set it out of the range of possibility of me getting picked because there was just it was so deep and so loaded that if I didn't sign, they could just go sign Ethan Hankins or go sign Kumar or go sign Ryan Weathers. Like there were just so many people that I knew that I probably wouldn't get drafted. Even though like I still let myself get offended that night when I didn't, like just kind of use it as a chip on my shoulder a little bit.
18-year-old pride. I was offended.
Yeah.
I got picked high.
Yeah, like I knew I shouldn't be, but I let it, like kind of for motivation purposes. I just let myself get offended and moved to fight another day. I think the worst part was answering questions afterwards, just like, hey, what happened, man? What happened? And without being too personal, being like, well, you know, I wanted $3.5 million. I didn't get that. But yeah, like it was once I said it though, it's such a good plan going into it because once you said it and like my agent was like, listen, you're going to be dead set about this. We will not come down. So I want you to be confident. It made it so much easier. It was just like, all right, yeah, if I get this, I'm gone. If I don't, if you go into it empty handed, that would be stressful.
Yeah.
Trying to weigh all your options.
Yeah.
But talking with teams and stuff, you know, you just meet with the area guys. They're not going to tell you anything. Like they're not going to give you any information and, most of the area guys, no disrespect, they don't know. Like, they're just doing their job. So, you really have no idea. We've said it on here before. You have no idea until you get picked what a team is thinking. You might kind of come to the conclusion that a team's more interested in you if they keep meeting with you, but you still don't know. But choosing an agent was pretty easy for me. I don't know about you, Schnelly.
Yeah, but I mean –
I just kind of chose the guy I feel like I'm most related with and felt like would put me in the best position to be successful.
Yeah, mine was just like I felt like I met with like probably 5 or 6 different people. And when it was funny because when I sat down with my agent, my mom was like, I don't know, like he just seems very intense. And I'm like, that's what I need. Like, I want somebody who's going to like fight for me and do what's best for me. And like now, like my mom was like, oh my God, like you made the best decision of your life. He's the best.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I don't know about you, but there's some that'll be like real friendly with you and like want to talk about different stuff. And then there's some that's more professional and I kind of wanted more professional. I didn't need another friend to put it quite frankly. Like I had, you know, I had plenty of friends. So, and I love the guy. Like we go hunting and stuff. So like, it ain't like we're not friends, but I just wanted somebody who I could just talk ball with, talk business with, and not have to feel like I had to entertain him. Yeah.
Also, sorry, Mom, because John and Steve will probably listen to this podcast and they're going to hear me saying that you didn't like him. So I apologize to my mom for calling her out, but.
So let me ask you this, because like, obviously Cole, like, us going to high school together was kind of different, but like, you talked about answering questions from other people. Like, was there any kind of pressure of like, oh, I don't want to let anybody down. Like if I don't get picked or anything like that, or
honestly, to an extent, I mean, growing up in a small town, like, you know, everybody and you know, everyone has your back, which is awesome. Like it's even, like growing up, you play against like your rival high schools and you're pretty competitive, but I'll never forget that senior year. It was like after the last time I've played against a lot of these guys, the coaches coming up to me and telling me like, hey, we're pulling for you. Like we've enjoyed playing against you and even the players' parents, like when it was all said and done, it was like, all right, we've played against each other. The battle's over, but we're pulling for you from this day forward. And so it was really cool. But then, yeah, at the same time, it's like, okay, like I don't want to let them down, and there was like for a split second the next day, I remember going to the high school to do to like work out and run after the draft, knowing I didn't get picked. And there was a small part of me that was like, you know, this is kind of embarrassing. Like, cause the people don't know what happened. They just think you didn't get picked. But everybody, like, I remember that day just was like, so when are you going to Georgia? Like, and then once I started talking about school, I got excited again. And they were clearly excited about me going to Georgia. Cause you know, most people around there are Georgia fans. So they made it really easy. Like as quick as it came, it went away just as quick.
Yeah. I mean, I had a very similar experience. I still like, I'm from a big city. I mean, Indianapolis is a big city, but as far as like, I went to a private high school, and I mean, if you went to Roncalli, there's a good chance your kids are going to Roncalli and your kids' kids are going to Roncalli. Like, that's just how the community is. And so like, even to this day, I feel a little bit of pressure. Like everybody's like pulling for me, and like everybody wants to see me succeed. And obviously like, they're like, it's not like you aren't defined by the baseball player you are, but like, there's still a little bit of a part of you that, especially when you have such a close community, like you want to do it for them too. They want to see you there. And then you also want to like go play in the big leagues and like, basically like, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but like show out for your community. So I
represent.
Represent. Thank you. Represent my community. And so like, I still feel that pressure a little bit, but I mean, I don't let it like weigh me down. I take it kind of as like, all right, well, you got people rooting for you and supporting you. So like, why not go give it your best shot type deal. But when you start letting it like bog you down and like get in your head, that's when it turns into not so good thing.
Next question is for Cole. It asks, can you describe the range of emotions you went through with your trade from the Padres to the Rays? How much were you in the loop, and how did you find out?
I'll start with in the loop. I'll tell a quick story. I don't know if I've told it on here before. I don't know if I should tell it on here before, but I'll do it. Something for the people. So I get a call from somebody who was pretty high up. He's no longer there, but I get a call, and I really like this guy, and he meant very well. It wasn't like he was just straight lying in my face. I think that, like, in that time period, this is what they thought. It was a week before I got traded, and, like, I threw really, really well at the alternate site, and I threw really well on instructs, and I felt really, really good about going in to spring training. Like, so good where I was going in where I felt like I was competing for a spot, and they told me that. So I get there, or they give me a call, and they're saying, hey, yeah, there's a lot of speculation. Right now, like, we're not trading for Blake Snell. We're not going to sign Trevor Bauer. We got a lot of guys who play really well between you, Weathers, Gore, some other guys, and we feel like we got enough to compete from within. So I'm like, all right, cool, let's do it. And then a week later, I was traded for Blake Snell. But – it was funny. I was just, you know, chilling at somebody's house, and I looked on the ESPN was on, and I saw Blake Snell got traded. We traded for him, and I was like, "Oh, that's sick!" Because at this time, I'm thinking like, I'm going to big league camp. I'm gonna be around the guys. It's gonna be cool. Cy Young. So I checked Twitter. See, I think it was Jeff Passan tweeted out that I've been traded, and I said on here before, like, it was nothing personal for me. I understand how the business works. I understood the situation that the Padres were in, where they had a team that could win. So I was excited about it. I thought it was cool to be in a blockbuster, to be honest. And to come to the Rays, who, you know, they spit out pitching prospects like they're barbecue sunflower seeds. So, I mean, I was excited about that. And I'm glad to be here now. It was, I guess the emotions were much more excited than it was like bummed or devastated. Like, obviously I was like sad I wasn't going to be around some of the guys that I'd grown pretty close to, but in terms of baseball, I don't think it changed much for me. I thought it was a good move.
This next question asks, what are your thoughts on baseball cards and memorabilia? Do you collect, or anyone in your family collect in general, or just your stuff specifically? did you collect before you got to the pros?
I mean, I wish I was a little more like sentimental about stuff like that. Like I love when I see videos of like somebody's like man cave and they got a bunch of stuff from like a jersey from a player they played against or a bat from somebody. Like, I think that's cool having like a baseball room like that. I know when I went to Scott Boras's office in LA, he had all kinds of stuff, just gold gloves, silver sluggers, stuff like that, which I thought was awesome. But and yeah, in terms of cards and stuff, like, I think it's a cool tradition. I think obviously it's something that's been around our game for a long time, and a lot of people enjoy it. You know, Shook, I know you really enjoy it. I think you can kind of speak on the what's important about it to you. But like, personally, I don't collect baseball cards or anything, but I have started like finding myself, especially in college, like we play against teams and everybody had their own ball with like their logo on it. And I'd try to get a ball. Like, I mean, I think I have a Florida State ball. I have a couple teams around the SEC, their ball, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of the same way. My dad is real into like I remember like my perfect game All American when we went to that, we got a glove and I used it my senior year. And then I like, once I use a glove, I get two a year. So I don't really need another one. So I just like throw it to the side. I don't really need it. I always am like, I don't need this. And my dad's like, you're going to want that in the future. And I'm like, okay, sure. I guess I will. So I never really collected like cards or anything. Like you said, I think having like a man cave with that stuff in there would be sick.
But, yeah, it'd be awesome.
But I guess I don't really like think about it. So I don't know.
When did you start collecting?
Probably around like elementary school, middle school. I mean, it was just a cool thing to like go to Walmart and pick something out, you know, and it was like, you know, when you go shopping with your parents or whatever growing up and you're like, oh, can I get whatever, like a toy or whatever, like mom's yeah. baseball cards for whatever reason. And just kind of kept
going. I would try. My mom would tell me to freaking screw off.
I had a lot of baseball cards growing up, but like I never really had the desire to get autographs. But like it would have been cool. Like I think it's cool, Shook, that like while you're getting all these autographs, like you see so many people play.
That's like the autographs really don't matter to me that much. Like, I mean, it's cool to have and everything, but like seeing Nolan Gorman in Memphis or in Gwinnett before he got called up, like that was cool. Seeing Liberatore pitch last year, seeing Ethan Small, who just made his debut, pitch in Nashville, like that stuff's cool to me. And like just the whole minor league baseball too is something I enjoy.
Seeing Nick Schnell playing Augusta.
Yeah.
I was saying, I wish it was in Rome, man. You couldn't get you a bowling.
No, I know.
No, I'm just kidding.
Call the Rays. Make a phone call.
Well, it's cool. Like I did enjoy doing stuff like that. Like I know this is not collecting at all, but I remember when we went and watched Jameis Winston when he was at Florida State. Like you remember stuff like that, whether you get his autograph or not. Like I remember trying for like maybe 4 seconds, but it was just like, this is, I'm never going to have, it was a freaking madhouse to get there. But yeah, stuff like that's cool. And I think, you know, having something to remember it by is also pretty cool. So I'll always sign autographs.
Yeah, me too. I don't, if people have them,
I think it's cool. So
like they came to watch me, I might as well give up my time and
right. Now listen, if you have like 4 pages, like come on.
Yeah, I usually only sign a couple. Like if you have a million of them, like I'll sign two.
Like here, we're gonna remember this happened if I sign like 2 or 3 here. We don't need 4 pages to remember this. Trust me. that's what I got on that.
This question asks a pretty straightforward worst bus ride ever.
BG to Lake County. Easy.
BG to where? Lake County?
Lake County.
How far was that?
14 or 18 hours. Hold on. I'll tell you. I think 18 hours.
Yeah, that's terrible.
We left after the game that night. and got there at like, I want to say like noon, got to like take a 2-hour nap and then had to be at the field.
Yeah, that's terrible. I'm about to go an off the wall route. This involves you. Do I have permission to tell a story from the Georgia trip?
Oh, dang it. I had a feeling you were going to tell this story.
Oh, yeah, sure. Man. We're going on the Georgia trip. So we come.
I think we lost you. Cole.
We lost you. It was an 8-hour and 30-minute bus ride. So, it's an 8.5-hour car ride. So, I think it was like a 14-hour bus ride.
I don't know what's going on, but it just keeps
kicking. We can hear you now.
Yeah.
It keeps kicking me off my mic back to the computer for some reason.
Figure it out.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. It's a user error probably. Anyway, so we caught it the Georgia trip in 8th grade where we just go to different cities in Georgia. We went to Savannah. We went to Jekyll Island. We went to all kinds of places for a week.
I'm excited for this.
We had 2 charter buses. 2 different groups. Girls sat on one side, guys sat on the other. I don't know why I didn't just do girls and guys. I don't remember why. But it made this story fun, way fun. So they tell us, you know, the rules in the bus, like, don't take a dump on the bus unless you just have to. Unless you absolutely have to. We left real early. It was still dark outside. And Shook, I was sitting by Shook. Shook gets up, goes to the back. I knew what he was doing. I've known him too well. So I was like, oh, man, this is bad. We're on this bus all week long. Keep that in mind. Well, this is like we're in middle school. I mean, we're in 8th grade. So, like, all the guys are taking dumps.
This was funny. Like,
yeah,
this
was yeah, funny it was fun. Us. But everybody was trying to flush, and it wouldn't flush. And it comes back around to where – somebody mentioned something about flushing, and Shook said, you can flush those toilets? I was like, bro, no way. This was like 1.5 days later, and it reeked. And we were on this bus for 5 more days. I was like, yeah, you can flush it. So Shook was just sitting there, and then everybody just piled on top of it.
Oh, everything. God.
So dude, by day defense, 3,
go ahead.
In my defense, they that morning they had told us, they were like, if the bus is like moving – don't flush it because there was like a plumbing okay. issue or whatever. And so I didn't flush it. Like I was like, oh, I'm just going to listen to him, you know?
And that was 30 minutes into the ride for a yeah, week long bus
it
trip.
It was.
So
they're just piling them on top of each other.
Dude, yeah. Piling up on top of each other. And so then by like, but like they were piling up on top of each other, like in the drain. Like it wasn't like they were just piling up where you could see it, but they were down in there piling up just stuff. So dude, by day 4, there's some liquid coming down the middle of the bus.
No.
And it dude, reeks. No. Like the girls are like miserable. Like they're freaking out.
Like this is hurting my
kind of got used to it. You just smell like you're riding a sewer. Well, it turns out it was coming from the toilet. It was just straight sewage water coming down, like everybody's bags on the ground, and there's just sewage water coming down the freaking
dude.
And we were on this bus 2 more days, keep in mind.
That was awful.
And so one of our teachers, legend, Mr. Holiday, he goes back there. He, like, makes it a big deal, like, takes off his shirt, does some, like pumping up the crowd. And he digs it out of the toilet.
No.
In the bag.
No.
And yeah, I can't believe it. It was disgusting. It was the worst bus ride.
Yeah, it was awful.
And we were on for it. It was a week.
That's probably the worst thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
You're doing pretty good if that's the worst thing you ever done.
Yeah.
That is disgusting.
Not only was it funny what happened and then how bad the bus ride was, but then the fact that I think he gave the bag after he dug it out to this guy sitting beside him to like hold onto the bag. And this dude was just like flinging the bag in circles like over the girl's side and stuff. They were freaking out. It was nasty. But as soon as I heard the words bus ride, my mind went instantly there. Nothing to do with baseball, but it was hilarious.
Mine did too. I figured you were going to talk about that. That's so funny. That's awesome.
That's good stuff.
This question asks, the biggest trash talker you've come across, They said it can be one from within the Rays or from outside the organization.
Now you got one?
Do you?
Yeah.
I mean, I have one, but I've never played with him.
Say it.
I guess I'm going to be playing with him. But Davion Whittle, he freaking – he'll strike you out and then stare at you for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Some people, that's what they use to get going.
I'm trying to think if I've played
mine. I mean, mine is so easy. It's Tony Losi. That dude, he's something special. But yeah, he's there. He cannot physically do anything without talking. Even if he's on your team, like, we played Fortnite, he's trashing me. He's fun to be around because he's like it's just that he enjoys. Like, he's not trying to be a jerk or anything about it. That's just how he plays, and it gets him going. It's hilarious. But yeah, T-Lo is definitely the biggest trash talk right now.
I've never really played with anybody, I guess.
Next.
You just play by yourself?
Yeah, he's never played with anybody.
Nobody who trash talks, really.
This one asked for Cole, the toughest batter you faced, and for Nick, the toughest pitcher you faced.
Well, the easiest pitcher I face is Cole, so.
Classic.
I'm just kidding. The toughest. We talked about this the other day, but I don't
know. I always say Tristan Casas. He just barreled me up always. I hadn't faced him since high school, so I'm sure I'd dominate him now, but back then he got me pretty good.
Ah, dang. It'd be something like a lefty for sure. If you're a righty, good luck. There's this dude on Columbia last year. He was kind of like effectively wild, but his last name was Willis. We all thought he was Dontrell Willis's son. He wasn't, but he was literally a lefty, pitched just like Dontrell Willis, and his last name was Willis. So it was like an anomaly that he wasn't his son. And he was a tough at bat. Like, he's just like real long out here and like just a real uncomfortable at bat and threw really hard. But it also wasn't like he didn't throw strikes, so it wasn't like that crazy. But
you hadn't faced like a dominant lefty.
Oh no. I'm not even gonna go there.
Go ahead, go there.
Nah, I don't even want to. No. Okay, so I faced Weathers in the PG All-American, like, practice game, because in Tennessee you're not allowed to play. And, like, he literally broke my thumbs.
He was disgusting that night, too, keep in mind.
But then I faced him in freaking BG, and he hit me, and then I hit a single off him. So, and those are the only three
times. Why didn't you want to go there?
Those are the only three times, because I owned him. I'm on base two out of three times I faced him.
I owned him.
So
he should have hit you harder.
It was with a breaker, I'm pretty sure. So
dang,
it didn't hurt very bad.
This question asks, why is Chick-fil-A the best fast food chain on earth?
Productivity.
Yeah, I don't really know, but it is. It just is. Like, it's the best fast food, and people want to be cute and say it's overrated and stuff. It's not. I mean, it's not. It's the best fast food you can get there. It's fast, literally fast, everywhere except for Port Charlotte.
That's a fact.
I don't know what it is. It's just like addicting chicken. It might have crack in it for all I know, but I love it. I could seriously eat it
every day.
I could eat it every day, 100%. I could eat it every day, but I don't know what it is about it. It's just, you just know you're in Chick-fil-A when you walk into Chick-fil-A. Like, blindfolded. You're like, I'm in Chick-fil-A right now. There's just good vibes. Like, you can feel the vibes right when you walk in. And you know you're about to feast.
Remember, we used to have Chick-fil-A for pregame meal in high school. Like, every game. And it was so good.
It was a chicken sandwich, chips, and a cookie.
We had a guy on our team that would stack up the chips like in his locker where the shoes go.
He listens to the show.
So yeah, shout out JD, one of my favorite dudes I ever played with.
But dude, no one, like, by the game, what, 25, you did not want to eat those dang chips anymore. Yeah. Like, I do not want these chips. And so we just gave them all to him, and he stuffed them on his locker. Last game we played, he had like 40 bags of chips in there when he's cleaning out his locker. Yeah, Chick-fil-A is – you can't beat it. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
This is an interesting question. It says, if you could assign someone a 50-grade tool, who and what would it be? He gives an example of giving Joey Gallo a 50-hit tool that would unleash some crazy stat lines.
Oh, I see. So somebody who sucks at something, but you give them a 50-grade tool for it to, like, upgrade them.
Yeah. I'd give Nick Schnell hitting for power. Freaking bomb. He Good needs Lord. To eat some more Chick-fil-A.
Can you imagine if – I already got a freaking better than a 50-grade power tool. I have 50 on top.
I know, it's a joke.
I'd have a freaking 100-grade power
tool. I might give you fielding and throwing with your freaking noodle arm you got.
Yeah, now. Give me freaking 50 on my arm. I need 50 on my arm. Yeah, I need 50 on my arm. Bad.
Yeah, with that noodle you got now. You about?
Yeah, it's bad. Gosh.
Thank
you. You should have a freaking cannon. Gosh.
I feel like I would give – oh, man, I had a couple in mind. I was thinking Clint Frazier defense because he's electric on offense. I mean, he can do it all. He's a hit for power, got a good hit tool. He's fast. If he was just like a 50-grade defender, he'd be an everyday player. I was thinking Gary Sanchez hit tool, 50-grade hit tool. He'd be the best catcher in baseball if he did.
Wander, low-key power.
Yeah, that'd be nuts. Same with X.
I was going to say X. I literally thought of
X first. Power. Yeah, he'd be the greatest baseball player ever. Dang, there's a lot. Yeah, it's tough. Like, you could even say, like, Byron Buxton might have a 50-grade hit tool.
Dude, yeah. He's the greatest player on earth when he's healthy.
Yeah, he's never hit for really high average, though. So, I mean, I guess you could argue. I don't know. 50's tough. That's somebody who just doesn't have it. Well, if he gave – nah. Well, is, like, 50-grade speed, would that be, like, stealing a lot of bags or no?
What if you gave, like, Shane Baz a 50-grade changeup? Or is his changeup gross?
Don't need it.
Yeah, I know he does.
Doesn't need it. He's gross.
He's literally disgusting. Shout out Shane Baz.
I'm
freaking own him, too. Shane, if you're listening, Shane, I own you, too. Just know that.
Schnelly rolls into Charleston and thinks he's Barry Bonds.
I hope he listens and texts me and just is like, I'm in the big leagues, bro. Shut up.
Yeah.
Like, you just got sent to low A and I'm in the big leagues. Ain't nothing wrong with low A, though. You know, just go ball. I'll be out of here.
Go River Dogs. Thirsty Thursday coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to stick in Clint Frazier defense. I think he could be an all-star.
Yeah. Wander power.
I like Wander power a lot. How many? What do you think is what are your greatest power now?
I mean, if you're talking about him as a 5 o'clock hitter, it's unbelievable. I saw him in a home run derby, and it was the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen.
So you think he's gonna come into it?
He hit 15 in a row at the Trop one time, without hitting one like inside the park. All of them, 15 in a row went out. It was the most unbelievable thing. He hit 21 in 2 minutes, 15 in a row.
So you think he's gonna come into it at some point?
I think that he legitimately every year will hit 20, like eventually we'll hit 25 every year.
Nice. Yeah, he's a beast. Yeah. I sometimes forget that, like, he's on our team.
And that he's 20 years old.
Yeah, I'm going to stick to Clint Frazier. That's fine. I'm going to lock in that answer.
Oh, you know who would be a nasty one is Pache. Pache? How do you say his last name?
Yeah, Christian. Pache.
Does he hit for average? Not really. He's just an elite defender, right?
Yeah, he hasn't hit yet.
I was going to say, give him a hit tool. He'd be nasty because he's elite in the outfield.
What about Billy Hamilton hit tool, 50? He would have been a perennial all-star. He'd have been the best defender in the league for what are you shaking your head for?
Nah.
Sure, this dude scored from second on a sack fly.
Run hard.
Yeah, you can run as hard as you want. You ain't running as hard as him, ever.
No, I get it. I just don't think that's you could do better than that. I just don't.
Dude, he would be an all-star. He'd be a gold glove outfielder every
single year.
Dude,
a 50 grade hit tool is like hitting freaking 280. 260. Yeah. 260. He probably did that. He bunts for a base hit every time.
No, he did not. I guarantee you Billy Hamilton's never played a full season hit 280. I'll admit that I'm wrong if that's the case, but there's just no way. Dude, he would steal like 60 bags a year if he hit 280.
Billy Hamilton's
full
season he never did.
He hit 250 in 2014 in 152 games.
Yeah.
He hit 260 in 2016.
He stole 56 bases that year.
Yeah, dude. He hit 280. He stole 70 bags. That'd be electric if Billy Hamilton had a 50 grade hit tool.
From 14 to 17, he stole 56, 57, 58, and 59 bases. That's all in order, too. That's
kind of hitting 245. What's his OBP there?
In 2014, he stole 56 bags, but he got caught stealing 23 times.
Is that bad?
Other than 2016.
Yeah, 50% rate. That's horrible.
Other than 2016, it was under 300.
Dude, your math is just
– it's freaking – a freaking –
it's terrible there. It's not even 60%. Close.
60%. He had 56. He had 23 caught stealing. It's like 63%.
Yeah, that's – 56 divided by 79.
What are you talking about, bro?
Right?
It's 71%.
Yeah, 71.
And he's still 56.
I guess the numbers just look bad.
Yeah, they look pretty good to me. All right, next number, Shook.
23 is a lot of freaking caught stealing. That's all.
And 56 is a lot of bags. That's turning 56 singles into doubles.
We could almost do a whole episode on this next question. It says, what's your take on fantasy sports?
Well, as an elite fantasy football player myself, I would say I love it.
Yeah,
2 years ago, fantasy football is literally elite. Me and Shook are in the same league. I walked away with a dream team. I make three trades before week one, if that tells you anything. I'm a fiend for it.
We're about to start a dynasty league too, and some Rays guys.
I think fantasy sports are awesome. I can't do basketball; it's too much. I would like baseball because I think it's the most like meticulous. Obviously, I can't play, and if I could play, but it couldn't be for money. So that
so that's no fun.
No, useless. But yeah, fantasy football. Like, I'm already prepping for fantasy football. If that tells you anything, I love it. I think it's awesome.
Cole was doing mock drafts and. June.
Well, last year. Yeah. Keep in mind, last year I had nothing to do.
Yeah, we were all sitting in the training room after surgery doing them like crazy.
Every day I did like eight.
Seeing what grade we could get on freaking.
And you know what? I had my worst draft in years, so I tried all kinds of bull crap. Man, yeah, I screwed myself last year. But Shook had a good team this year. Shook always has a good team. Shook don't trade. Shook is a good drafter. I'm a terrible drafter. I usually hit like two guys late, take the risk, trade all my first picks when they have value, and usually it works out. Last year, I was decimated by injuries. But nobody cares about your fantasy team. Literally no one cares about your fantasy team. If you start telling somebody about your fantasy team, you don't want to listen. Like, you care a lot about your own. And
you don't
elite.
Give a rip about anybody else.
But if somebody starts telling you details about their own, you don't care.
Unless you're sitting there with the boys at lunch and you're like, hey, like, check
this out. Well, around the draft, it's sick. Yeah, yeah. When you're bouncing questions off, but when you're like, dude, I lost by 2 points this week.
Yeah,
nobody. Keenan Allen fumbled. You're like, dude, I don't care. I won this week. I can't relate to you.
And yeah. I'm better than you.
How many points did you score this week? Yeah, I'd have dominated you. But if you're playing in an 8-man league, you need help.
Yeah, you're fake.
If you're playing in a 10-man league, you're still pretty freaking soft. If you're playing a 6-man league, you're not playing.
Yeah, it's
12 and 14. That's me and Shook are in a 14-man league, and that's for grown men. Join a 14 man.
Those strategies are crazy.
Wait till one of your running backs go down.
Oh yeah,
you're
yeah.
screwed. Yeah. You're playing Nyheim Hines.
Yeah, you're riding with Nyheim Hines. Dude, he's and a Devontae beast. Williams.
He's not a beast. He might be this year, but he was not a beast last year.
He was good enough.
No.
Don't hate on the freaking.
I'm trying to think of the worst player I played last year. Last year it was bad. But yeah,
Saul came in last in our league, didn't he?
Who?
Chaney.
Yeah, he. But anyway, yeah, fantasy sports are elite. Moral of the story.
All right, we got two more questions here, I think. What was the transition like to professional baseball, and what were some unexpected challenges?
Being 18, playing against grown men, I'd say is the biggest thing. Like, you just, especially out of high school, you just get there. I was freaking 6'2", 185 pounds, soaking wet. So I was just, like, very, like, I'm just now, like, growing into my body. Like, and finally, like, filling out. And, like, I feel like I'm finally I'm a dad now. So I finally got my man body.
Yeah.
But I'd say just, like, the difference in, like, and the everyday aspect. Like, high school, you're practicing every day, but, like, it's not that intense. You're playing every single day, nine innings, like maybe one off day. And if you're hot, you're playing like you don't want out of the lineup and your coach don't want, or your manager don't want to take you out of the lineup. So like you're playing every day if you're hot. So like you can end up playing freaking 18 games in a row if you're not careful.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, like off the field stuff, like I learned a lot of that in college and that was more of a transition. I would say the biggest transition to pro ball was time on the mound, like even bumping up a day into a 6 day. I was doing 5 day in San Diego and it was like, felt like I was on the mound every single day and I liked it. It just had to, you know, you had to change up your routine a little bit. That was probably the biggest change for me. Cause going from 7 day to 5 day, like it literally felt like I was between bullpens. It felt like I was on the mound every single day. And I feel like my stuff got a lot better by doing that. But at the same time, you had to know when to back it up, take it off. Clearly, I didn't do a good enough job of that, but I'm still learning.
So would you say the six-man rotation and the five-man rotation is a pretty big difference for you? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, it went from throwing every Saturday in college to throwing at the alternate side every fifth day and then – last year was a six-man rotation. And then so on the days that you throw on a Tuesday, you throw again on Sunday. So it was an adjustment. That was because you get so used to routine and then changing it up. It's tough for pitchers. We're creatures of habit. But once you find it, like it's good. It's like you feel really good. Once your body gets used to that routine, it becomes natural again.
This last question asks, what was the most surprising instruction or training you received regarding injury prevention? He has that in quotations. You've received since joining the Rays, something they've taught you that was new insight or science?
Most surprising instruction training you received.
That's tough. Yeah, I got nothing for that, honestly.
That's tough because you're not really – I'm not training, like, injury prevention, I would say. Like, everything you do is to try to be healthy long-term. Like, I never do something and think this is to prevent injury. Like, I'm doing it – like, this is to maximize my mechanics or this is to help me get my legs more or this is to help me set my scaps more. Like, it's something really specific, not like I'm doing this so I won't tear my rotator cuff. Like it's obviously you do a lot of prep to get loose, you do band work, some people do plyos. Like it's all that you're doing to prevent injury, but in your mind, it's not to do that. It's to maximize your output while you're on the mound. So I would say I don't ever do anything for injury prevention. It's more of if my mechanics are right and everything's working on the mound, that speaks for itself and that's going to work itself out. If everything's on time, that would be preventing injury.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the biggest thing is like staying on top. Like the most injuries you see with position players are like quads and hamstrings. I'd say the biggest thing is just like staying on top of your running and making sure it's consistent, because like, and you got to be able to feel it out. Like, for example, like Manny Margot just had a either a quad or a hamstring, but he also went off for like 2 weeks. He was on base like every game, running a ton. And then he kind of got a little bit colder, and then all of a sudden he gets a hit and runs down the line. Like, you got to be able to balance your, like, your workload and understand like when you're doing more and then when to back off, kind of like Cole said, and then like when to ramp it up. Like if you're in a little bit of a slump, maybe run a little bit more, keep your body like in shape. When you're hot, maybe back off the pregame running or like any type of running you do like during practice and stuff like that. So I'd say that's the biggest thing, just managing your own workload, because there's a lot of guys in the minor leagues and not very many people. Like, there are people there to help, but like, you can't be watched over 24/7. Like, you're a grown man playing a grown man sport. You're supposed to take care of it on your own.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was a lot of fun. We appreciate y'all sending in questions. We always enjoy doing that. We got off topic a little bit, but it's part of the fun. It's what we do. We improvise a little bit. I guess this is dropping on Wednesday. So who y'all want to do for the show on Saturday? Bobby? We could do Bobby, and we talked about
it.
Let's do Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby Witt going off. Y'all check back in Saturday to hear Bobby Witt.
Where should I go to dinner tonight in Charleston?
Ooh. What part are you in?
We're in John's Island, like 20 minutes from the field. Not by where we were last year, but I'm willing to drive. I was thinking hometown, but I don't know if I want to go all the way there. That's so – their wings, bro.
Get a loose. Lose is just as
good.
Yeah, good place in Charleston. I do miss the food. Yeah. But, appreciate the question. Start thinking of something for next month. We kind of gave you the feel of what we do. When we do these things, we'll get better as time goes on. But it was fun. We enjoyed it. Appreciate you guys. And as always, stay smart.